welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of crime. Later on, The Whistler from 1952, but first, an episode of Counterspy called The Case of the Murdering Messenger. This first heard on ABC on August 25th, 1949.
Counterspy!
David Harding, counter-spy. Washington calling David Harding, counter-spy.
Harding, counter-spy. Calling Washington.
United States counter-spies, especially appointed to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
Tonight, The Case of the Murdering Messenger. And now, to Counterspy. In espionage, the penalty for mistakes is death. Every member of the guilty spy ring is doomed by its faraway superiors. Yet the sentence is rarely carried out by direct means. The watchwords are concealment and mystery. In the city of Detroit, a small branch library stands in a quiet side street. One morning, a young man with eyes alert entered the building and went to the main reading room.
Excuse me, miss.
Yes, sir.
I want to turn this book in.
Julius Caesar's Commentaries in the original Latin.
Yes.
You're quite a student, Mr. Argyle.
Caesar was quite a boy.
Are you taking out another book?
No, I'm leaving Detroit very soon. Goodbye, and thanks a lot.
Goodbye, Mr. Argyle.
I beg your pardon.
Yes, sir?
I was looking on the shelves for Julius Caesar's Commentaries, but it doesn't seem to be there.
No, it's right here. Our only copy was just returned a moment ago. Do you want to take it out?
Yes, please. Here's my library card. Harry J. Peters. From Peters, Counterspy Field Office, Detroit, to David Harding, Washington. Have just received coded report from Counterspy George Argyle, operating undercover inside foreign spy ring in United States. Code used, alternate word and line transposition. What are your orders?
Peters, have message decoded in Detroit and hold there. I'm flying Detroit immediately.
Mr. Harding, this is the original message Argyle left for me in the library book, disguised as a letter home.
Thanks, Peters. Still addresses me as Aunt Bessie.
Here's the decoded transcript, Aunt Bessie.
Thanks, Junior. Dear Mr. Harding, trouble ahead. Last night, the only man in the spy ring I ever saw was killed in a car smash out on Woodward Avenue. A fake accident.
There was an accident, Dave, and a man was killed.
What's more, I've been ordered to leave my job in the turbojet factory here and go to Memphis, Tennessee. I think the superiors of the spy ring now realize that someone has fed them nothing but false information for a year. I don't believe they know I was the one, but evidently all members of the ring are to be moved around.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, I don't like that either, Peters. We still don't know who the other members of the ring are.
It may be getting dangerous. Want to pull our guy out?
And lose 3 years of our work and preparation? Still, I don't want Argyle to be left entirely alone in Memphis.
Is Aunt Bessie worried?
Definitely. Argyle adds here that he'll be at the Hotel Lee. Peters, brush up on your southern accent. You're going to be there, too.
Mr. Argyle?
Yes?
I'm the hotel fire inspector.
Oh, come in. Good to see you, Peters.
Any news, Argyle?
I got this postcard today.
From the Southern Beauty Tourist Bureau, Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Guided tours of historic Southland. See monuments and battlegrounds of the war between the states. Special feature, visit the High Mountain Caves.
You'll notice that last one is circled in red ink, the High Mountain Caves. And notice here in the schedule of tours...
Yes. Another circle of red ink around the date Thursday, 5 p.m.
Obviously, that's when my next contact with the spy ring is to be made.
Well, look, Argyle, I'd better join the group, too.
I think that'll be too risky, Peters. Those tourist groups aren't very large. Whoever the contact is will take a good look at everybody.
Well, how are you to be recognized?
My name is known to the ring. I'll simply give it when I buy my ticket for the tour. Then I'll just wait and see what happens.
Now, folks, we're pretty near finished our tour. The famous High Mountain Cave. Scene of beauty with the stalactites, stalagmites. Kind of scary, too. One more little demonstration before we step outside again into our lovely southern evening. This here underground river we've been following from one of these caves to another ends right here, you see, in a deep well or chasm. Leave me tell you, the fellow that falls down here ain't never coming up. You see this rock? I'm going to drop it down. Now, you'll have to listen hard to hear the splash. Ready? There she goes. Well, that was that. Now, if you'll be so good as to step to the exit there, the bus will return us to Memphis and to your hotel. Let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Excuse me, folks. Wait out there just a minute. One of our members seems to be missing here. I'll locate him. I'll be right out here. Hey, mister. Mister? Hey, there you are.
Help, please.
Good heavens, my friend. You've been stabbed.
Guide, get me to a doctor, quick.
But the knife.
Don't pull it out, don't.
But I must. Otherwise, how can I finish you off for good?
And Argyle was stabbed to death right there in the cave, Peters?
That's right, Mr. Harding. It was my fault. I should have gone right with Argyle, no matter what he said.
Oh, now, don't blame yourself, Peters. You took every reasonable precaution. How are the police handling the case?
All members of the tour have been questioned except the guide. He's disappeared, so he must have been the murderer.
Peters, in my opinion, this spy ring isn't just being moved around. It's being wiped out.
Well, Dave, there's one way to make sure. Let me take Argyle's place.
Good idea, but how?
First, a squib in the papers that Argyle was only wounded. Second, I'll enter a hospital under his name.
The murderer will make another try, Peters.
All right, let him, Dave. That's exactly what we want.
Nurse, you said Mr. Argyle had this here room?
Hey, go right in, sir.
Ah, Mr. Argyle. How fortunate you were to have lost nothing but a little blood. May I sit down by your bed? I was about to visit you at your hotel, Mr. Argyle, when I read in the papers of the attempt on your life in the High Mountain Cave. So I came straight here to the hospital. I'm surprised, if I may say so, to find you alive, receiving visitors.
It was only a flesh wound, Mr.
Forgive me, Mr. Argyle. My name is Anthony Blix, B-L-I-X, the Tri-State Travel Agency. The reason I was so anxious to see you was to give you this, your river steamship ticket from Memphis to New Orleans. The one you ordered through our office?
Oh, yes, of course.
The boat leaves on Tuesday, Mr. Argyle. Will you be able to travel?
I think so, if I take it easy.
I'm delighted.
Will I be seeing you again, Mr. Blix?
The world is growing so small, Mr. Argyle, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Oh, by the way, we were unable to get you a cabin entirely to yourself. I'm sorry to say you'll have a cabin mate. Goodbye.
to Aunt Bessie from Nephew Argyle. First contact made. Anthony Blix of Tri-State Travel Agency, Memphis. Next contact may be somebody on riverboat to New Orleans.
Thank you, Stuart. Put my suitcase down here. Then you may go.
Yes.
I beg your pardon?
Good morning.
What are you doing in this cabin?
My ticket says I was booked in here.
Why are you lying down? Are you ill?
I'm recovering from an accident.
It's ridiculous.
There was nothing ridiculous about it.
I mean, you're being booked into this cabin when I was booked in here, too.
Obviously a mistake.
Obviously.
I'll have myself moved right
no,
out.
No. It's easier for me. You're halfway settled already. I'll ring for the steward.
Button's right here.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr.
Argyle.
Argyle? Well, I'm sorry I was angry. My name is Valerie Arden. Are you going to stay in New Orleans after we get there?
That's hard to say. How about you?
I live in New Orleans, Mr. Argyle, even though I'm English. Listen, Argyle, I have your next instructions.
Yes?
On reaching New Orleans, you're to see a man named Avery L. Clark, River Road, number 821.
Yes.
Tell him I sent you and say that you're applying for the job he has open in Los Angeles. Clear?
Clear. There's the steward.
Just a minute, steward. Well, Mr. Argyle, I do hope your fever's better.
It was a knife wound, Miss Arden.
A knife? Good gracious, if I had to kill anyone, I'd use poison or a gun, wouldn't you? Knives are so uncertain, aren't they?
To Aunt Bessie from Nephew Argyle. Boat contact made by one Valerie Arden. Next contact in New Orleans. Avery L. Clark, 821 River Road.
To Argyle from Aunt Bessie. On arriving New Orleans, register Hotel Esplanade. You will be given room 484. I will be there with Lieutenant Fabian of New Orleans Police. See you tonight.
Nice to know you, Peters, or Argyle. Which is it?
Peters will be safe, Lieutenant Fabian, in this hotel room anyway. Any news, Mr. Harding?
Well, I've ordered a complete checkup on that man Blix back in Memphis, Peters. I expect a report very soon.
About Valerie Arden, Peters. She really lives here in New Orleans, runs a high-toned gift shop. About Avery L. Clark, all we know is that he's in the sugar business.
Well, Dave, Valerie Arden said I'm to talk to Clark about going to Los Angeles.
Well, I think that's just talk, Peters. I'm pretty sure now that every member of this spy ring is marked for death by its own employers abroad. Clark may try to kill you.
I'll have to take that chance, Dave.
Peters, did either Blix or the woman act like they suspected you're not the real Argyle?
No, Lieutenant. But the guide who murdered Argyle in the caves would know I'm not the right man.
Well, that's the big risk, Peters. The Blix and the girl have somehow been warned by the murderer, or just leading you on. Now, when are you to see Clark?
The longer I wait, the bigger the risk. I think I'll go right now. 821 River Road.
Well, what is it? What is it? Well, don't stand there on the porch gaping.
I'm sorry. May I ask who you are?
I'm Mr. Clark's housekeeper. Come from Oklahoma, and I don't like New Orleans, and I don't like the riffraff that comes to see Mr. Clark. See him you want to see, I guess.
Yes. My name's Argyle.
Well, come in, young man, but don't expect me to announce you. He's in the living room. You can go right in and announce yourself.
All right, thank you.
And tell him not to ring for drinks, because I got the bacon to do.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
My name's Argyle.
Come in.
I met a Valerie Arden on the boat from Memphis. She's She says you need a man for a job in Los Angeles.
Argyle, somebody's trying to wipe us out. They tried to get you in Memphis, didn't they? You see? First you, now me.
You? Do you know who's trying it?
What individual? No. But death for everybody. That's the high command's way of punishing failures. Look at that double window behind me.
One pane is broken.
3 bullets did it, 10 minutes ago. Those 3 bullets are now in my back.
What?
Yeah.
You need a doctor.
That's no use. I'm going to die. Whether you're my friend or my enemy, Argyle, never sit with your back to a window. Now, you better get out of here. You'll be caught for my murder.
Clark.
Say, Mr. Clark, about the bacon. I got to... Say, you, what's the matter with him?
He's dead. He was murdered.
Murdered? Oh! He's all blood. You murdered him, you riffraff. You murdered him.
No, I didn't. Listen, I want you to call the police.
Me, if you didn't kill him, why don't you call them? Where are you going?
I'm getting out of here.
Getting out? You murdering riffraff? But you won't get away with murder. I'm calling the police, and I'm shouting it from the house up. You murdering riffraff? They'll catch you! They'll catch you!
Hey, you.
What?
You're under arrest, buddy. There was a murder. You're under arrest.
Are you the police?
Yeah. Me and my friend here. Come on.
Where?
We got a car. Come on, snap it.
I'd like to see your credentials.
Credentials?
Papers to prove you're police.
Sure. Hey, Bing, show them, what do you call them, credentials? There's our credentials, buddy. Come on, Bing, we're taking this guy for a ride.
Back to Counter Spy in just a moment. But first...
Pepsi-Cola hits the spot. 2 full glasses, that's a lot.
And now, back to Counter Spy. It is late night on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain outside New Orleans. A house with all blinds shut stands secluded behind a grove of cypress trees. And inside the lonely house...
Well, Mr. Argyle, I must say you took a long time to recover your senses.
Oh, Miss Valerie Arden. Were you the one who hit me on the head?
Good gracious, no, Mr. Argyle. That was Bing. For your information, we're in my house, and both Bing and George are in the very next room.
That's interesting.
I brought along some brandy. I thought you might need it.
How about you?
Oh, I don't need a drink. I haven't committed a murder.
Meaning Clark, hmm? Who did it?
You.
Me? You know better than that. Your men must have been watching.
Clark's housekeeper said you did it.
So you grabbed her, too. You work fast.
I couldn't afford to have her screeching all over New Orleans.
Neither could I.
Until I was sure her screeching was useful.
Useful?
You're a counter-spy, aren't you, Mr. Argyle?
If I were a counter-spy, I wouldn't have shot Clark. I'd have arrested him, wouldn't I? Clark told me somebody was trying to wipe all of us out. Is that you?
He's crazy.
Not anymore. He's dead.
But it's a wild idea. It's absolutely fantastic.
Who's next? Blix?
You saw Blix in Memphis, didn't you?
In the hospital, yes. But you were in Memphis, too. You could have arranged my little knifing. You could have shot Clark tonight.
Mr. Argyle, I think I will have some brandy.
With pleasure.
Thank you.
You're really scared, aren't you? So I guess it's not you who's trying to wipe us out. It's Blix.
Mr. Argyle, why couldn't you be the one sent out from the Home Office to get rid of us all?
If I were, why would I have stabbed myself back in that Tennessee cave?
Wounds can be faked. Where were you knifed?
Here, in the side.
Right there? Oh.
Dirty trick to hit me there.
I've made sure you were knifed.
Yes, haven't you? That knocks out your theory of my being the official killer.
But not of your being a counter-spy. Maybe you could fool Blix alone or me alone, but not the two of us together. Suppose we settle that now, tonight.
How? Blix is way up in Memphis.
Oh, no. He arrived here in New Orleans this morning, and in a few minutes he can be here, and we can find out whether he murdered Clark, and whether or not you're a counter-spy. I shall phone him, Mr. Argyle. Meantime, have another drink, won't you?
Harding speaking. Go ahead.
Lieutenant Fabian, Mr. Harding. I got bad news.
Let's hear it, Lieutenant.
We saw Peters come out of Clark's house fast. But before he could reach us, two men grabbed him and took him away in a car.
Well, did you follow?
No, we lost him on a turn, Mr. Harding. So we went back to the house and found Clark shot to death. You any idea where Peters is?
No. But I'm on my way to your headquarters with a report on Blix from Memphis. He was the one who abducted the real guide in the caves, took his place, and murdered Argyle.
Not Argyle. It's lucky they caught him in Memphis.
They didn't catch him in Memphis, Lieutenant.
No?
He's probably here in New Orleans right now. And he's the one who knows that Peters is a plant. We've got to find him and stay close to him, or Peters won't live out the night.
My dear Valerie. How exquisite you look, as always.
Hello, Blix. We've been waiting for you.
And Mr. Argyle. As I suggested in Memphis, it is a small world, isn't it?
And getting smaller.
Blix, something's gone seriously wrong among us. Clark was killed earlier tonight.
Oh?
Perhaps because he'd become too expensive. Like you, Blix. And me. And Mr. Argyle.
I wasn't aware that Mr. Argyle was so expensive.
He is, if he's really a counter-spy.
She's crazy.
Blix, you ought to know. You saw Argyle in Memphis. He is a counter-spy. Bing and George are handy. They can take care of him tonight.
Valerie, you're being ridiculous. I trust Mr. Argyle as much as I trust you.
And how much is that? If Argyle's to be trusted, then who tried to kill him? Who murdered Clark? Blix, have you been sent here to get rid of us all?
Valerie.
What?
I heard a car outside. Where are your men?
In the front room. Why?
Go and ask them about the car.
But...
I heard. Please trust me, Valerie. Go and see.
Very well.
Listen, Argyle, don't waste a second. Both our lives depend on it. I know you're not really Argyle. I've known it since I saw you in the hospital in Memphis. I realized then that my game was up, so I sent you along to meet Valerie and Clark purposely as evidence of my goodwill. You are a counter-spy. Aren't you?
What if I were?
I'm ready to tell you everything you want to know about this spy group in exchange for your letting me go free.
So you're the man sent out to wipe out this group?
Mm-hmm. The information the real Argyle sent us turned out all wrong. All of us are supposed to pay for that.
You don't add up, Blix. If you've been betraying your own friends by exposing Valerie Arden and Clark to me, why did you murder Clark?
A shrewd question, Mr. Argyle, or whatever your real name is. Frankly, I thought it best at the last moment to make myself look good, both to my own people at home and to you. Whatever happened, I'd have a good story to tell.
Smart boy.
Now, if you're really a counter-spy, you'll let me go free. I can save us both and this woman, those two plug-uglies. If not, I'll have to kill you. Now.
Did you really hear a car outside?
Of course not. What's your answer?
I'm sure I hear a car. Maybe two.
You're evading my question, Mr. Argyle. That means that you're not a counter-spy. Yes, I see. I've made a mistake. That's easily corrected with a gun.
Drop your gun, Blix. The house is surrounded.
What? Drop it, Blix!
Got it, Mr. Harding.
Sorry. I was so close, Peter.
It's all right now. How about the woman?
Lieutenant Fabian, these men are out front. They've already got her and her two gunmen. And here we've got the murderer of Argyle and of Clark, haven't we?
Mr. Harding, you mistake me. I just made an important offer to this gentleman here. A full report.
Blix, I'll make you an offer. You give us that full report, and we'll see that it reaches the government that employed you. They wanted this ring wiped out. Now you can report complete success
with some help from the counter spies.
Tonight's counter spy program originated in New York, was directed by William M. Sweets, and featured Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer with music by Jesse Crawford. Counter Spy is a Phillips H. Lord production for Pepsi Cola. Enjoy some Pepsi, ice cold tonight.
Counter Spy, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of August, 1949, an ABC broadcast. The show had enjoyed 7 years on the air up to that point and was heard 2 times a week on ABC. Nearly 8 million people tuned into that broadcast. And you're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up next, an episode of The Whistler, a CBS broadcast, retransmitted via Armed Forces Radio next from February 24th, 1952, called A Matter of Time.
Armed Forces Radio invite you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for The Whistler's strange story, A Matter of Time.
With Russ Logan, time was of the essence. He'd always been a most meticulous man. Minutes meant money. And appointments, to his way of thinking, were made to be kept. Through the years, you've become even more so, haven't you, Russ? You're careful, almost calculating, and certainly ever alert for opportunity. Despite the kidding you've taken from your business partner, Jim Kendrick, and even your wife, Jean, precision and time in all matters have remained almost an obsession. Tonight, riding with Jean and Kendrick in his big chauffeur-driven car, you sit very quietly, grimly amused that a matter of carefully planned minutes will mean another opportunity to you. And a thin smile of anticipation crosses your lips as the car swings in the winding drive of Jim Kendrick's home in Coldwater Canyon.
Rusty, you're awfully quiet. Restaurant food disagree with you?
Russ, your wife's talking to you.
Sorry, Jim.
Penny, for your thoughts.
I think you've been dreaming about everything we've been saying.
I'm sorry.
Maybe if we get onto the subject of nightcap. How about it?
Sounds good to me, Jim.
You see, Gene, we've hit on something that interests your lord and master.
A nightcap will pick us all up.
Sure. Oh, stop right here, Nick.
Yes, sir.
Here, let me give you a hand now. You can put the car in the garage, Nick. Mr. and Mrs. Logan have their own car.
All right, Mr. Kendrick.
Come on, folks.
Now, you see, Russ is looking at his watch again. Afraid you'll miss an appointment in the morning, darling.
What's the matter? Russ, with all your clock watching, you'd think you weren't a member of the firm.
Jim, I keep telling you, you ought to rig up a time clock for Russ. Let him punch in every morning.
Okay.
You don't mind the kidding, do you, Russ? Not in the least. And you've a reason for glancing at your watch. The seconds are counting again, aren't they? In your life. And more particularly in your partner, Jim Kendrick. If he only knew what was about to happen, he'd be watching every moment, too. You're all inside the house now, and you have only to wait until you hear Nick, the chauffeur, come in the back door to enter his room. Then you can set your plan in motion. But something unexpected happened.
I got a little surprise for you, folks. Some fine old Napoleon brandy.
Oh?
Let's see now. Oh, yes, I've got it locked up in the den. Wait right here. I'll get it.
Wait a minute, Jim.
Yes, Russ?
Nothing. It was just something I was going to ask you.
Go ahead, ask me.
Never mind. It'll keep till tomorrow.
Okay, I'll go get the brandy.
Oh, Jim!
Jim,
Jim, what happened?
Oh, in the den. He's still there. Get him.
But, Jim, you've been hit.
Get him, I said. Go after him, Russ.
I'll take care of him, Russ. Here, Jim, lie down on the davenport. I'll call a doctor.
Hurry up, Russ. He went out the French window. Don't just stand there.
Where do you keep that gun you have?
In the desk in the den. Will you hurry up?
Sure, sure. Jane, you call the police. I'll get him, Jim. Don't worry.
It's infuriating, isn't it, Russ, that everything had to be spoiled by a simple break in the routine. Jim's surprise, the bottle of Napoleon brandy. It sent him into the den before you wanted your plan to go into effect. Before Nick, the chauffeur, had time to get inside the house to his room. And now, racing around the side of the house, you hope that Nick hasn't caught the killer. You're furious that things didn't go according to schedule. And now you can only hope as you rush to the spot, far back on the property, where you're to meet the man who fired on Jim Kendrick. You promised him you'll hide him away, haven't you, Russ? Yes, that's what you promised. But actually, you're going to use the gun in your hand and put him away forever. At the designated spot near a huge pepper tree, you wait. Listen for his footsteps. Raise the gun and aim in the direction of the sound. And then...
Mr. Logan? Mr. Logan?
Nick!
Oh, I think he's trapped, sir, up in the canyon. Mrs. Logan says the police are on their way.
You're terrified now, aren't you, Russ? It's going all wrong. They'll capture the gunman and he'll talk, implicate you. When the police arrive, they close in around the canyon in back of Jim Kendrick's place. Nick stays close to you as you join the search. Finally, you hear the shouted words that you fear the most.
Over here, everybody! We got him! We got the guy!
You knew it. Everything was ruined the moment your neatly timed schedule was broken. A bottle of Napoleon brandy. If it hadn't been for that, Jim Kendrick wouldn't have entered the den quite so soon. There would have been time for Nick, his chauffeur, to have returned to the house. And the gunman you had hiding in the den would have had time to get away and reach the spot outside the house where he was to meet you without being seen by Nick. But it's gone wrong all the way. And now it seems the gunman has been caught. You haven't even a chance to run for it because of the presence of the police.
Well, we've got him, Mr. Logan. Fine. Fast worker. And the chauffeur here got a good look at him when he ran out of the house. Says he can identify him.
Is that the man there?
That's him. How about it, Nick?
Hey, wait a minute.
What is it, Nick?
He's not the guy.
What?
He's not the guy. Officer, he's not the one. You got the wrong man.
You sure?
Sure, I'm sure. I got a good look at him.
Oh. Sorry, mister. You can go. Guess we made a mistake. All right, spread out, boys, and get going. We got the wrong guy.
It's almost too good to be true, isn't it, Russ? That your gunman escaped. Somehow evaded Jim Kendrick's chauffeur, Nick, and the police. And for the moment, at least, you're in the clear again. But you're still worried, aren't you? Nick said he got a very good look at the gunman. Maybe he'll realize soon that he's seen him before. And he might remember where. The little bar near your office. That's where you planned it all, isn't it, Russ? Yes. When the police leave and you're back inside Jim Kendrick's house, you learn from your wife that your partner's wounds are not serious.
Well, he's going to be all right, Russ. They took him to the hospital in a police ambulance, but the doctor said he wouldn't have to stay there long.
We better get on home, Jim.
All right. As long as Jim's okay. Whoever did it got away, I guess.
Yeah, he got away. You run on up to the apartment, Jean. I'll put the car away.
Don't be long, dear.
I won't.
Hey,
Here.
Frankie, what are you doing here?
Where else would I go? What went wrong? I thought you said
the chauffeur... I know what I said. Kendrick went in there sooner than I expected. I couldn't stop him.
That chauffeur saw me. I know he did.
Yes, yes, he saw you. Gave the police a description, too.
Look, you said you'd hide me out.
I would have. Things had gone right, but I can't hide you in my apartment. I've got a wife, Frankie. A wife who doesn't even know I'm mixed up in this.
But the cops, if they start working on the description that chauffeur gave him, it'll add up to Frankie Rizzo. Me.
Take it easy.
Well, that's all right for you to say. You got me into this, said there'd be nothing to it. A simple job.
That's right. It would have been if you'd killed him. That's what you were paid to do.
But let's get it.
I thought you knew what you were doing. I thought I was hiring a professional.
So, what do we do now?
Maybe that's your problem.
Oh. No, you're in this. You did the hiring.
Well, I'll help you get out of town, that's all.
But I can't skip town, not tonight. They'll be watching for me, the police. They'll have the airports covered, every railroad station. Fine mess. I wish you'd never picked me for this job. I wish you'd never even found me.
I went to a great deal of trouble finding you, Frankie, a great deal. I've never known anyone in your business before. It took me quite a while.
So what happens
now?
Don't
get excited, that's all. I'm not letting you spoil everything. Here, get into my car. I'll drive you someplace.
I've got a pretty good hideout. There's a motel near the ocean.
A motel? Good. I'll take you there. Wait in the car. I'll tell my wife you've gone someplace and that I have to take you.
You have to help him, don't you, Russ? Even though you're disgusted with the way he handled the shooting. You tell Gene that you've decided to pick up a carton of cigarettes. A few minutes later, you're driving out Wilshire with Frankie Rizzo. He directs you to the Surfside Motel on the beach. You leave him there, return to your own apartment, answer Gene's sleepy inquiries with the alibi of a flat tire. When you finally turn in, there's little sleep for you, is there, Russ? You're tense and nervous, dreading the moment when you'll have to face your partner again. And that moment comes the following morning as you visit the hospital and stand at his bedside. Jim greets you with a curious smile on his lips.
Hello, Russ. Nice of you to come.
Good morning, Jim. How do you feel?
Just fine. They tell me I'm going to live.
Of course you are.
Too bad, isn't it, Russ?
What?
Would have solved all your problems if I'd kicked off, huh? Given you control of the business, too.
What in the world are you talking about?
That little deal you approached me with 2 weeks ago.
Deal?
Come off it, Russ. We disagreed, remember, on that little transaction which you thought our freight line would fit into so neatly?
You want me to drive business away from now on?
If it's crooked, yes. Even if it means 50,000 profit. I won't stand for our trucks accepting a contract to haul contraband. I told you 2 weeks ago. I'm telling you again now. As long as I'm a partner in this outfit, we're keeping it clean.
Okay, okay, Jim. Forget it. I have. That's why I didn't know what you were talking about. The moment we disagreed, I dismissed it from my mind.
Really?
Of course.
Funny. Maybe I misjudged you, Russ. I actually found myself wondering if that little shooting at the house didn't just have something to do with your plan.
Now, that's too ridiculous to dignify with an argument.
No, we won't argue.
The man who was in your study was obviously after the safe, not you. You just made the mistake of walking in there. I certainly didn't suggest it.
No, you didn't. Matter of fact, you stopped me. Why, Russ? What was it you were going to ask me right at that time?
I have no idea.
No. No, I don't suppose you have. All right, we won't settle anything this way. Maybe when the police pick this guy up.
I wish they had him right now. Certainly don't like any feeling of mistrust between us. Jim, it isn't good for business.
No, it isn't. Nick, my chauffeur, thinks he's seen this man before. I mean, before last night.
Oh. Might give the police a lead, huh?
Might, Russ. Just might.
He say where he'd seen him?
Yeah, down at the gym Nick goes to. It's the same guy. He's a cheap gambler named Rico or Reno, something like that. Kind that just might take a pot shot at somebody for money. Provided the right sort of person talked him into it. Assured him it would be an easy setup, no danger.
Well, Nick ought to tell the police about all this.
Oh, he has. Yeah, Nick's told the police. Good boy, Nick. Very loyal. Well, sit down, Russ. Sit down. Visit a while.
Yeah. Sure, Jim. Sure.
You struggle to control the nervousness, the fear that builds within you, don't you, Russ? Try to chat casually with Jim about the business during the next few minutes. He knows, doesn't he, Russ? Yes, you're certain Jim knows you hired someone to kill him. You're glad when your visit comes to an end. You hurry out of the hospital and back to your office. Then that afternoon, there's a phone call for you.
Hello, Logan speaking.
Hello, pal. Look, this place is giving me the willies. I want to get out of town.
You listened to me last night.
Okay, so now I'm taking your advice.
Look, Frankie, I'd rather talk this over in person. I'll be out there in about a half an hour, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, Logan. $10,000 ought to make a nice start.
$10,000? Now, wait a minute.
Sure, I know. $5,000 was all you promised, but the price has just gone up.
But you made a deal.
Since then, I decided to retire. And a guy who retires has got to have capital and an income. You're it, pal. Or else.
Or else what?
Jim Kendricks might like to know who wanted to have him knocked off and why. Well, what do you say?
All right, Frankie, you win. I'll pick you up here as soon as it gets dark.
After you leave, Frankie, you return to your office, sit for nearly an hour thinking things out, and finally you reach a decision. By the time you arrive at your apartment, you know exactly what you're going to do.
Jane!
I'm in the bedroom, Russ. Home early, aren't you, darling?
Yeah. You going out?
Uh-huh. Del and I are going over to Westwood to a cocktail party at Ruth Taylor's. Oh, mind fixing your own drink, Russ? I'm rushing.
I think I'll skip the cocktail.
Oh. Heady?
Yeah, sort of. Short nap should fix it.
Oh, darling, before you get yourself comfortable, you mind doing something for me? Run down to Stella's apartment.
What for?
Well, she's loaning me a pair of stockings to match my new dress. I couldn't get the shade I wanted.
Okay, I'll get them. Oh, Jean.
Yes?
How long are you going to be gone?
Oh, I don't know. A couple of hours.
Well, you haven't forgotten we're going to the Andersons for dinner tonight. They're expecting us at 8, and I don't...
You don't want to be late. I know. I'll be back by 7:30 or so.
Well, never mind the or so. Make it 7:30 sharp. I'll meet you down the lobby.
You're pleased that Jean will be out of the apartment for 2 hours, aren't you, Russ? But you've still something else to solve. The little item of how you're going to leave the building without being seen. It comes to you when you reach Stella's apartment, 2 floors below. Here, standing in her living room, looking out over the rear garden, everything falls neatly into place in your mind. Her sunroom window opens on the rear fire escape. Stella lives alone, and since she'll be at the cocktail party with your wife, her apartment will be empty. You chat with Stella for a few moments. Then as you leave her apartment, you slip the catch on the lock of her door. You know that she might check it as she leaves, but you have to take that chance. You hurry back upstairs.
Here you are, Jean.
Oh, thanks, darling. Is Stella waiting?
She's all ready. Just finished putting on her face.
Oh, dear. Go on, say it. I'm never on time.
It's your party this time. Just don't be late for the dinner, then.
I won't.
I think I'll stretch out for a while.
All right, darling. I'll be on my way.
Oh, Jean.
Yes?
On your way out with Stella, tell the clerk downstairs I don't want to be disturbed. No phone calls?
I'll tell him, darling.
You pretend to drop off to sleep. 5 minutes later, Jean leaves you alone in the apartment. You glance out the bedroom window. It'll be dark in another half hour, won't it, Russ? Dark enough to cover your movement down the back fire escape, through the garden. It's 6:55 exactly when you again slip into Stella's apartment. Hurry down the fire escape, and then to your car parked in the street. 10 minutes later, you arrive at the Surfside Motel. You're thankful for the roar of the nearby surf, as it will help cover the sound of gunfire.
Yeah, who is it?
Open up, Frankie.
Hello, Russ. You got the money?
No. I don't have the money, Frankie.
Huh? Look, I thought I was going to take a little trip.
You are going on a trip.
A long one.
Hey, what's the idea of the rod?
Rod? Oh. The idea of the rod, Frankie, is this.
As Frankie Rizzo crumbles to the floor, you whirl and race back to your car parked in the alley. You're about to pull away when a police car stops in front of the motel. Two officers get out, followed by Nick, Jim's chauffeur. You watch as they stroll toward the motel office. Then when they're out of sight... A lucky break, wasn't it, Russ? If you'd been only a minute later, they'd have caught you. But now you're in the clear, racing back to your own apartment. It's 25 minutes after 7 when you slip back into the building through Stella's apartment. You sprint upstairs to your own floor, take the elevator from there to the lobby. Chat for a moment with a desk clerk until Jean arrives.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling, but really, I'm only a few minutes late.
See what I mean, Fred? Women, never on time.
Oh, I know I'm late, dear. That's why Stella let me out in front.
Don't be too hard on Mrs. Logan, sir. It's only 7:32. Why, if it was my wife, well, she always does... Oh, excuse me, sir. Yes, sir?
I'm Lieutenant Weston, Homicide. I'm looking for a Mr. Logan. Russ Logan.
Mr. Logan? Why...
Logan. What is it, Lieutenant?
I'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind.
Of course.
In private.
Well, let's go up to my apartment. Do you mind if my wife...
No. Come along, Mrs. Logan.
I'll ring for the elevator. What's this all about, Lieutenant?
Just routine questioning, Mr. Logan. Where were you this evening between 7 and 7:30?
In my apartment. Came home this afternoon around 5. My wife and I were just about to leave the building when you walked in.
I see. You were here then since 5?
The desk clerk will verify that. Only way out of the building, you see, is through the lobby.
Of course, there's always the fire escape.
Well, our apartment and fire escape are on the front of the building. I could hardly leave the building that way without being seen, Lieutenant. See here, I wish you'd tell me what...
Nothing to get worried about, Mr. Logan. As I said, it's just routine. We have to follow up all leads.
Leads? In regards to what?
Murder.
Murder? Oh, Russ.
We've been checking on a man named Frank Rizzo. Your partner's chauffeur, Nick Bemis, thought Rizzo was the man who took a shot at his boss.
Well, I still don't see where that...
We checked all of Rizzo's old hideouts. The Surfside Motel was one of them. Only when we got there, he'd been shot.
Oh, how dreadful.
Well, shouldn't you be discussing this with my partner?
Rizzo had your phone number scribbled on a piece of paper, both your home and office number. That's why we came here first, Mr. Logan.
Going up, Mr. Logan?
Oh, yes. Lieutenant, this is ridiculous. I was in my apartment all afternoon, since 5 o'clock. You can check with the desk clerk and the elevator boy here.
Well, that's right, officer. I just took Mr. Logan down a little while ago.
I see. This way. Our apartment is just...
I don't think I'll hold you any longer, Mr. Logan.
Very well, Lieutenant. I'm sorry I flew off the handle that way, but...
Sure, I understand.
Well, long as we're up here, how about having a drink with us?
Oh, thanks, no. But if you don't mind, I would like to use your phone. I want to put in a call to headquarters. Then I'll be on my way.
Don't mind at all, Lieutenant. Come ahead.
You've answered the lieutenant's questions, and he seems satisfied with your story, doesn't he, Russ? That you were in your apartment between 7 and 7:30, at the time when Frankie Rizzo was shot to death in Santa Monica. Yes, you're certain you're in the clear now, as you, your wife, Jean, and the lieutenant walk down the corridor to your apartment door.
Come on in, Lieutenant.
Why, Russ, that sounds like the electric alarm clock in the bedroom.
The alarm...
I said it before I left. I was afraid you'd oversleep, and I know how fussy you are about being late.
I'll turn it on.
Just a minute, Mr. Logan. I'll do that.
I've got it, Lieutenant.
I'll take it, if you don't mind. I thought you said you were here in your apartment between 7 and 7:30, Mr. Logan.
Why, I guess.
This electric alarm clock was set for 7 o'clock. It's been ringing ever since.
Right.
Well, how do you explain it, Mr. Logan?
Why, I... Look, Lieutenant...
I can explain it, Logan. Because you weren't here to turn it off.
Now, wait a minute. I told you...
I think you'd better come down to headquarters after all. A hand paraffin test will tell us if you fired a gun recently. And if you have, we've found our man.
Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Ted DiCorsia, Margaret Brayton, Ed Begley, Raymond Burr, Herbert Litton, and Bill Boucher. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Adrian John Doe, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week at the same time for The Whistler. The Whistler has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of February 1952 on CBS. And so closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.